Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Hello, hello, everybody. You are listening to HealthyLife.net, and I am Charisse, and this show is Charisse Unplugged. And today, I have a seriously wonderful guest today, one of the greatest humans on the planet, Jeremy Buck. What can I say about you, Mr. Jeremy Buck? You are somebody who I have looked up to for a long, long time. Nobody says anything bad about Jeremy Buck. But the thing that blows me away about you, I got to speak some wonderful things about you because there are so many people who are inspired by you. I don't think a lot of people know a lot about your beginnings, your humble little beginnings, and I would love to delve into a couple things about you and your life and how you started with music, because you're a musician, we all know this. But tell me about you. Where did you grow up?
Wow. Well, first of all, thanks so much, Charisse, for having me, and that was an amazing introduction. I'm like blushing over here, but I appreciate the very kind and generous words. And
painful
I feel the same
skin.
About you. You're a very amazing person as well, and I love getting to know you the past few years in the music circle here in the South Bay. But me, I was born on a farm in a small town in Indiana. Actually, Mitchell, Indiana is where I grew up until I was three, and then I moved to Springville, Indiana, which is a very small town as well. And we had a very tiny house. We had a little three-bedroom house with six people. So I'm the oldest of four, so I have two younger brothers and younger sister. And we used to sleep, you know, double bunk beds in one room, which is awesome. I wouldn't give it up, you know. But, yeah, I kind of grew up on a farm and grew up kind of playing sports. And my mother used to play the organ when she was younger, and she used to play for weddings and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So we had this tiny little house, but we had this massive Hammond X77 organ with a 6-foot Leslie speaker.
Oh my God.
With really no room in the house for it. But so that was kind of my first, you know, introduction to music. And my mom would every once in a while, you know, turn it on to play a little bit. And then, you know, I'd be up there and all my brothers and our little fingers were just, she couldn't play anymore because we're just like, nah, 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 all over the organ. But
Is everybody musical?
Not really, no. They all kind of went different directions. They all played, you know, maybe in high school band something. But for me, it was, I don't know, I just got it. I don't know why, but I started with the saxophone in fifth and sixth grade because I wanted to play. I actually didn't know what I wanted to do. We went to the cafeteria in my elementary school. Mm-hmm. And in the cafeteria, I remember they had all the instruments laid out, like the saxophone, the flutes, the clarinets, the trumpets. And then they just had a picture of the drums, and it was a timpani drum, and it was about, at that time, it was like $2,000 for the one big timpani drum. And
wow.
You know, obviously that's not possible, and it's huge and heavy, and I only remember that being like in classical music, and I was not into that. So I stuck with the saxophone, which is like similar to the recorder that we all started playing when we were
kids.
I
remember that.
And it was like the same kind of notation and fingering, so it was like an easy gradual progression to that. So I like the saxophone. I heard it in some rock and roll songs, and I think I remember listening to the radio, and there was a song on called "She Works Hard for the Money."
Donna Summer.
Dun, 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 dun. And I remember like picking that out on the saxophone by ear, and I was like, "Oh, okay, hey mom, check this out." And I played it, and so I realized then I was like, "Okay, I can kind of do some cool stuff with music." And I ended up becoming an honor band, and they took all the different elementary schools and they bussed us in for a spring concert at one of the local junior highs. And I was there, and the the musical instructor hadn't got there yet, so a lot of the kids, because different buses came in different times, so we're all sitting in our chairs, and I remember there was the percussionist set up in the back, and there was a big bass drum and, like, some cymbals and a snare,
mm-hmm.
and these guys were from a different school, and they started playing this drum beat, like, boom, 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 and everybody's just moving. I'm looking back going, what the heck is a saxophone? I want to do that. I didn't think you'd do that. And so I went home that night, and I had a cardboard box and an old Hot Wheels, carrying case, the plastic case,
yeah,
and a couple of spoons. So the cardboard box that had like my winter clothes in it, you know, that was my bass drum. And then the Hot Wheels case was my snare. And I just did that beat over and over, boom, boom. And I was like, this is what I want to do. I got some pots and pans, you know. And,
oh, great.
You know, everybody's from there.
That.
Yeah. And then, So I had that kind of love and interest for music, and I wanted to play the drums, but I already had a saxophone, and we had a very small house. We didn't have any room for a drum set. And so my grandparents, they had some cattle and a farm as well, and my grandmother was very into the 4-H. My dad grew up, you know, I don't know if you know about the 4-H fair, but it's very big in the Midwest, and they have fairs out here too. And you,
what is that?
So the 4-H fair, it happens every summer, and it's an opportunity to show, like, you know, people do crafts. They do craft shows there. They show up their artwork. And also there's like livestock shows. So you show cows, pigs, horses, sheep. And so it's a week long thing. They have, you know, carnival rides and stuff like that. It's really a cool, you know, I love kind of growing up there, and they, you know, sell all the cool refreshments.
I've seen it on TV from New York.
It's big in the Midwest. It's big in the Midwest. So they have, you know, kind of have these regional fairs, and then the winners go to the state fair, which was the big, you know, it's the big Super Bowl of the state, you know.
So it's a big deal.
It's a big deal. And a lot of these people show up their livestock to kind of like, you know, if you get a great prize, then, you know, if you get first place or whatever, you know, you got a great option of either, you know, selling your, you know, bulls or actually selling your meat to the market. I hate to say it, but that's kind of how it works. And
yeah.
And so the higher quality of cattle that you have in your line, you know, can generate more revenue for you. So it's like a way to bring kids in and get them acclimated with agriculture and responsibilities. You know, you work with the cattle and or the pigs, you know, and you wash them and you kind of lead them around. So I was totally into sports. I did not want to do the 4-H, but I kind of had to. And so I did my best, and we went, and I remember we worked with a couple cows at my grandparents' house. That's where they were at. And you know, washed them down, brushed them, and tried to lead them. And I was scared to death. I was young, you know, tiny.
They're kind of huge.
They're like 1,500 pounds, you know. And so I was like, okay, this is not too bad. I did it, you know, 4 or 5 weeks in a row and got to know them. And so, okay, well, I'll show two. I show up at the fairgrounds, and there's six cows there, four I'd never seen before in my life. And I was like, what is...
Oh, God.
This is not right. I'm not showing these cows. And my grandfather said, yeah, I know you have to. I was like, well, you only want me to do this because you're going to make money off of it. What's in it for me? He said, well, you have to do it. I said, well, I'll do it if you give me some money, if we sell it.
Businessman already.
So, yeah, I don't know why. I don't know where that came from. You know, I lost it, I think, since then. But for whatever reason, I felt like inclined to do it. And so I was able to convince them that, and I showed all six cows, and one of them won a trophy. I got this little cow trophy still. It's, you know, kind of cool.
Really? Must have been so proud.
Yeah, it was cool. And you know, we ended up selling a cow. My grandfather made do on it, and so he gave me $600. I was in sixth grade. I had $600, and I went and bought my first drum set for $375.
Nice.
It was a used Reuther. I don't even know if it's a brand name. Reuther, I think.
Wow.
And then I bought four drum lessons, and for $100. So it was like $25 a lesson from a guy named Brad Brown, who's an awesome guy in Bedford. And
is he still around?
I hope so. I don't know. I haven't seen him in a long time. I really hope he is. He was cool.
I hope you're listening.
Yeah. Okay. And so, unfortunately, during that time, it took a while to get paid. I didn't get paid right off the bat. It was, you know, maybe 4 months later. But I came in at a great time, and we unfortunately lost the farm. We had some just bad luck, and we lost the farm we were living on, and so we had to relocate and move to a different part of the city, a different township. So I was going to be going into a different junior high school.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I had just a few more days left of elementary school there in Springville. So when we relocated, we ended up having a bigger place. You know, it's kind of ironic, but a bigger place. I have my own room. So that's why I bought the drum set, could put it there.
And then your own room.
Had my own room, and then I have a drum set in there. I had the four lessons, and I went to another junior high school that first day and never mentioned to the band director at all that I'd played saxophone. I'd had four lessons that I was a drummer, and the rest is history. Sorry, it's kind of a long story, but that's how I sold a cow to buy a drum set, and here we are.
So, like, you know, like people say, I lost the farm. Like, you really did.
We did. Lose the farm. We did.
But I don't know anybody who actually lost the farm.
We did lose the farm.
So that's why you had this accent, because you always had this, like, very cute southern-y accent. And I was wondering, where is that from?
It doesn't leave me. It's not as bad as some of my friends when I go back to Indiana.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah,
they think you're like very California now, huh?
I think so, yeah.
Definitely. You still have family there?
I do, yeah. I think my mom might be listening right now, or my dad.
Oh, hey!
Yeah,
hi.
My mom, my dad. Yeah, my dad and my mom and my sister all live in Indiana. Oh. And my other brother lives in Idaho, and I got another brother that's in St. Louis.
So what brought you to California?
California. I had always dreamed to come to California. I don't know what it was about this place, but I was kind of, when I was in college, I played baseball in college, so I went to Purdue University and got injured my junior year, and I got hit with a line drive. I'll show you. It's kind of crazy. But, yeah, I was a pitcher. And I
know y'all can't see that, but that's a good one.
Yeah, so I had six surgeries in 9 days and almost lost my leg, and luckily I got very lucky in that part and sort of kind of ended my, as my junior year, kind of ended my baseball. You know,
what about your drumming?
So that's where I when I went to college, I had a little keyboard. I started, you know, kind of teaching myself keyboard and a little bit of guitar, and then I played drums with my high school friends in high school when we would go to my house, and those guys ended up creating a band called Stone Carnival. I mean, my best friends, and but because I got a baseball scholarship, they all went to Indiana University, which is like 20 miles north of where I grew up. And I was really bummed because I wanted to go with them, but I had a scholarship offer to play at Purdue, so I went to Purdue. And then kind of just would hang out on the weekends, and then they started kind of getting their band going, and I was playing baseball every weekend. After I got injured, it was Christmas break. I came back, and my dad got me some congas, like percussion. So I started playing with him over Christmas break, just setting up the congas and stuff next to the drummer, and that was really cool. And I was like, I really got a taste for playing live music, you know, with a band.
And you could still do your
percussion. So then I didn't stop, though. Like, I would play. I would have practice. I remember I would practice. You know, I'd go to school all day on Friday, get out of practice that evening at about 6:30. 7 o'clock, and I'd have my car loaded up, my Honda Accord loaded up with my congas and stuff, and I would drive 2 hours down to Bloomington and hop on stage at the Bluebird, a very famous place in Bloomington, IU.
Wow.
And play a 4-hour show, get done around 2:30 in the morning, go back, hang out, rock out with everybody about 6 in the morning, sleep for, I don't actually go to bed about 5 in the morning and wake up at about 6:30 and drive 2 hours back to be at practice at 9 o'clock until about 3 p.m., sleep for another hour, load up, and then drive to the next town. So I burned the candle at both ends a lot on that. I think I lost some life energy, but I gained a lot, too. It was cool. So I did that my whole senior year.
It's a good way to cut your teeth on the music world, though.
Yeah. Then, you know, I was doing that, and when I graduated college, I ended up moving in with the guys in Bloomington and became a full-time member of Stone Carnival. And I had a keyboard, too, so I started playing kind of keyboards and percussion. And then we had the good fortune to meet a guy who was playing keyboards for John Mellencamp. John Mellencamp lives in Bloomington, and he was a big inspiration to everybody there. And Mosey is his name. He actually still a great friend, and he's my musical mentor, basically. But we met him, and then he brought in opportunity to record. He was from L.A. originally and got in John's band, and he had this Tascam 16-track reel-to-reel recording, you know, machine. And
I remember those.
We had a 4-track machine. That was it, but I'd never had a multi-track situation like that. And back then, we're talking 1997, you know, it cost you $10,000-$15,000 to go record in a studio somewhere. They didn't have the computer capabilities yet to do with Pro Tools and Logic like they do now, or GarageBand. So he gave me my first taste of actually how to record a multitrack, and that's when I got hooked. I was like, okay, I didn't know you could do this. And so writing became kind of my big
See, you went from
thing.
Just performing to all of a sudden going, I can produce.
Yeah, so I started doing that. And then I was also, you know, the California thing. When I got injured, my leg, I was taking some acting classes at Purdue. I always wanted to be an actor. I used to love going to the theater. We'd go, like, every Sunday with my family and watch movies. So I was just kind of dreaming of doing the movies. And then in Indiana, you can't really do that. And Hollywood was where it's at. So I did some acting classes there, and then had an agent in Indianapolis, and started doing some commercials, and then started doing some independent films. And after I graduated, I did, I think, 6 independent films before I moved to California. And I was doing the soundtracks for them because I had this capability to record with Mosey. So I was writing music for the soundtracks and stuff. And it was cool. And then I did a movie called Back Home Again. And the guy who wrote it lived in Santa Monica. And so that was my opportunity. I said, can I come out and visit? I've never been. So I came out in June of 2000 and met up with him. And his roommate at the time got a job promotion to go to Macy's up in Santa Barbara. And they were going to pay for that spot for like the next 4 months, 5 months, while he kind of relocated him. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how. It was $750 for that one room. And I was living with a whole band for, I think it was $600 in a 4-story townhome in Bloomington. Like, that was it.
Yeah.
And I was going to pay $750 for, like, a, you know,
welcome to California.
10-foot piece of, you know, room. But I was like, I got to do it. I said, I want that room. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I want that room. And so he said, okay. And then I moved here in November. I just hit my 24-year mark, so November 11th I landed, and so been here 24 years. Don't know how I made it that long, but just had a dream.
I think California loves you.
No,
California loves you.
Thank you. I love California. I love the people here. It's been so lucky, you know, met so many people.
When you first moved into California, what was it like for you? I mean, because that's a culture shock thing. Was it? Or did you take to it?
It was a total culture shock. I couldn't believe it. I remember just, you know, I only knew my friend Williamson. That was the guy I moved in with.
Yeah.
And we're still amazing friends to this day. He was just out here visiting a couple weeks ago. And I remember just, it was so exciting, you know, like, because it just seemed like there was just so much opportunity. There was so much potential or possibility. And I had so much hope, you know, going in. Like, and I knew that I wouldn't regret it. I actually wrote a song 2 weeks before I moved out called Going to California. And there's a little refrain, you know, the beat chorus in there is, I might not make it when I get there, but I'll never know if I never try. And
is that on your Spotify?
Yeah, it's on Spotify.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's my very first album.
You're going to have to check that out.
Yeah. So, but this might not make it thing, I just thought, you know what, I have to give this a shot. I have to give it a try. Because I moved out here, I was 25. And, you know, I was like, it's now or never, you know. I don't have
good
any kids.
For
I don't
giant.
Have any relationship. I can just go. My parents were very supportive, and that's the thing. I've had amazing support from my parents from day one. And I was just
going to ask you, because a lot of people dream and think about doing stuff, but very few actually act upon it. You did it.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
support helped. Huh?
I did. The support helped. You know, I didn't have any money, you know, but I found a way to make it work. And
what was your first job?
I started working at a sign shop called Art Zone Signs in Santa Monica.
Uh-huh.
A guy by the name of Muhammad, a wonderful human being. I used to work at a sign shop back in Bedford called Johnny Signs after I graduated, because I graduated with a graphic design degree, visual communication design degree. So I knew how to do that, and I worked in the sign business, and I knew all the vinyl cutting and this program called Gerber Edge. And so when I went out looking, you know, I thought, to be an actor, I need to be flexible. I'd never worked in a restaurant before, so I was dropping my resumes off at restaurants.
Right.
They're like, yeah, bro, you know, and I'm not cut out for it, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not really into that. I'm not very graceful when it comes to that, serving food. But you know, so I was just trying, and I remember walking on I'm trying to think what street that was on. It's in Santa Monica. It wasn't Olympic, but it wasn't Pico either.
And that was
I might have been Santa Monica Boulevard, actually. And I saw this Art Zone sign, so I was like, I just went to every place and was kind of like, I don't know how I'm going to survive. I got to bring some money in. And I met this guy, and he was there, and I told him, he looked at my resume, he said, oh, you sign shop, you know Gerber Edge? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, he showed me this thing. He had one that had been sitting there for maybe 2 years. The dust was on it. He didn't know how to, he bought it from somebody.
Yeah.
He didn't know how to use it. I said, oh, I know how to use it. He said, okay, you come get this thing working. I pay you $6 cash under the table.
$6.
Yeah. And I had to take it. And so I took that. And
$6. That's awesome.
Yeah. I ate 99 cent spicy chicken sandwiches every day from Carl's Jr. over the next door. But it gave me a chance, you know, I worked and did it and then met some more people and then had another opportunity to move to another company doing kind of environmental graphics. And so I did that. So, you know, whatever, you hustle while you can, while you keep the dream alive. And
how soon thereafter were you able to get into music?
So,
oh, you know, we're going to have to talk about that.
Oh, 60 seconds.
Yeah, because I want to know, how did you go from being in a sign shop to actually getting into your music world? We're going to talk about that when we come back from this break. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Charisse Unplugged. We're talking to Jeremy Buck, and we'll be back after these messages.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best Earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. EarthChannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now. So come to EarthChannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call earthchannel.com at 1-800-849-8978. That's 1-800-849-8978.
When you need quality Auto Parts Warehouse is fast and easy. Always get the part that fits. Just enter your vehicle type to find the part specific to your car. Auto body parts, mirrors, brakes, suspension and steering, engines and drivetrains. Need something yet? What about exterior and interior accessories or headlights? Auto Parts Warehouse has them. Top brands, great prices. Visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Auto Parts Warehouse.
Vistaprint. I'm sure you've heard the name. Over 17 million small businesses and consumers have used Vistaprint for printed products, ranging from business cards and brochures to invitations and thank you cards. Why? Because Vistaprint has the lowest price guarantee, and you can design your products with templates or upload your design. And they have free products. 3-day rush service and satisfaction is always guaranteed. Try Vistaprint. Just go to the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on the Vistaprint logo.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Hi, guys. You're back listening to Charisse Unplugged and our special guest, Jeremy Buck.
What's up?
So, Jeremy, I'm so happy you're here. I really am.
Thank you.
Like
thank
I said, you really are an icon in the South Bay area, and you've done so much here. And I'm so glad that we get to hear about your background, because I knew that accent had a story. So I'm really glad to hear where that came from. And I was curious to know, your very first music job, What was that?
Oh, my very first music job. Well, besides the Stone Carnival years back in Indiana.
California.
In California. So, I, because I was only making $6 an hour and I had to pay $750 just for rent, if you do the math, it's almost impossible to pull that off. But I didn't go out. I didn't go to any bars or anything. I had a four-track machine that I took with me. It actually wasn't even mine. It was my friend. We called him Wild Bear, but his name was Andy Day. And he was in Stone Carnival, and he let me borrow this four-track machine, and then he forgot to take it with him when I met up with him for the last time before moving to California, so I thought it was a sign. So I kept it with me. I wasn't going to see him, and I couldn't leave it for him, so I took it to California. And then I would just write every night. I would write 2 or 3 hours just on this four-track machine. I was just kind of obsessed with it while I was kind of waiting to be called for auditions and stuff between doing them, you know.
Oh, so you're still trying to act on
it? Yeah, I came out here and I had a manager and an agent right away, and I was doing the whole commercial audition stuff. I wanted to do more theatrical stuff, but it was very difficult to get in. I hadn't met the right people yet for that.
Yeah.
But I had a pretty good agency. I was with Kazarian Spencer and Associates, KSA. My friend Williamson, who I live with, got me in there. He opened the door for me there. It was really cool.
Nice.
And I had another manager named Dora Whitaker, and so they were sending me out, and I was booking stuff, you know, but I, you know, none of the big money really came in. And like they said, you know, I had some, you know, I did the Dr. Pepper commercial I had to audition for, and Mark McGrath was in it, and it was like a Buddy Holly kind of thing. But I auditioned to be the Buddy Holly, and, you know, I got the part, which is great, but I didn't get the Buddy Holly part. I got to play a stand-up bass in the background. So, you know.
Not the same
way. Yeah, not at all. And then they had... They had like 27 dancers in this thing, and then they took Mark was on stage for 1 second, and he jumps off and goes in the middle of the floor, and then all the dancers go around. So the whole entire commercial is these dancers, and they had a thing called what's called Group 9 back then in SAG, and so if there was more than like 9 people or something like that doing the dance, there was 27 of them. They all got principal pay, so they had to pay 27 people principal pay. So me and the other guitar player and the bass player that are on stage for a few seconds, who all auditioned to be in this thing and got picked, got like nothing. Like I think I made
$6.
I think I made like $300. You know, I mean, but by the time your agent manager take a cut, like it's nothing. You know, but it was a cool experience, but. And then I did another one for Carl's Jr. That's supposed to be a really big, you know.
Isn't that what saved you, like, food-wise?
I should have got that just on principle. I supported them for so long. But ironically, yeah. And then they pulled that. I had to join SAG for that. So I remember it was $1,500 to join SAG. And I didn't have enough money to join it. Mm-hmm. So I had to open up a credit card. And I think they gave me like, $1,000. And so I had to use all that. I maxed out that card and the rest I could put in with my own money to buy that spot. And then we shot the spot. They did 4 different commercials. So I was like the last one. After they aired 2, it wasn't doing very well. So they canned the whole thing. So mine didn't even go out. So I only made $600 that day. I lost $900. So while that was going on in my life, I was writing music, and I met a guy from Indiana out here through a mutual friend, another artist named Rich Hardesty, who played with, you know, back in Indiana, and he grew up with this guy in LaPorte, Indiana. And so his name is Darren Weiler, and I remember Rich, before I moved to California, said he gave me his number. And then when I moved in 2000, Purdue, where I graduated from, they were in the Rose Bowl that year, at 2001, January 1st. So Rich came out, my friend Darren booked him a show at the Westwood Brewing Company in West LA.
Mm.
And so I went to that show, and I met, you know, I saw Rich, and then I met Darren. And then Darren and I became really good friends. And then he was interested in hearing my music. He was trying to get into that world of, like, you know, like booking shows.
Right.
He's not a musician at all. He liked to connect the dots for people. And so he kind of took an interest. And then we became friends. And I started playing him all my 4-track music and stuff. And he's like, man, this is good. And I didn't plan on singing. I was going to write and have other people.
You didn't want to sing?
No, I did. I mean, when I was with Mosey, I was writing like hip hop stuff and had people rapping, and I'd bring people in to do the hooks. And But when I was in my room out here, I was kind of singing the demos of things. And then he was like, "You got a good voice. You should sing." I'm not going to sing. I'm going to be an actor and just do this. And he's like, "No, you got to do it." So kind of gave me, he definitely gave me the confidence and believe in me. And then he took me to a studio here in Torrance called Dino M3 Studios. Might be M10 now. I don't know. His name's Dino Mataloni. Uh-huh. Really cool producer, local producer here in Torrance. And we recorded, Darren even funded it for me because I had no money, but he believed in me so much. And so I owe so much to Darren Wyler. He's amazing. So he's one of the reasons that I could do this. And so Darren, if you're listening, thank you, brother. So he took me to Torrance, and we went and we recorded Going to California, and then a song called PCH Avenue, another song called Who Knows What. And that was the basis for my first album starting there.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So you moved here 2000, and that happened, what, a year later, 2 years
so
later?
So in 2003, it took a while because we met in 2000, but it took maybe another year before we started kind of hanging out because he lived down here in the South Bay and I was in Santa Monica, and then I moved to Los Feliz before I ended up moving down here to ended up moving in with him, and we call the house that I still live in now. I've been there over 20 years.
Yeah,
we call it the Chateau Motel.
And love it.
Because it was like we had so many people coming out, but I wrote a song called Chateau Motel on my first album because when I came out here to visit in 2000, in June for the first time, we went to Hollywood, and I was just hanging out in front of the Chateau Marmont Hotel.
Okay, yeah.
And I was just kind of tripping out that here I am from Indiana. I always dreamed to be in California. I'm here in Hollywood, and there's the Chateau Motel where Janis Joplin and
this amazing moment.
John Belushi passed away, and I was just thinking about, man, these guys had, seems like they had it all, and they were so lonely. Like, what, you wouldn't want to be that successful but have nobody. And so I was just feeling this this vibe, and I went back to Indiana before I moved out here, and I wrote Chateau Motel, but I couldn't remember Marmont at. So I was like, at the Chateau Motel. Chateau Motel. Okay. That's the song. And then that became our record label. So every song that I've released has been through Chateau Motel Records. So we lived in the Chateau Motel, Chateau Motel Records. And so January of 2003, I played my first show at a little place called Susie's, which is now called Barsha.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And Darren introduced me to a guy named Joel Geist, who is my current bass player.
We love the Joel.
And Darren and Joel knew each other from San Diego, and Joel was living in Vegas, and he'd worked at a recording studio in Rockford, Illinois, which is where he grew up, and so he'd recorded like 200 albums. So when I met him, he had a computer and stuff, and he came to my first show at Susie's, and then the next day, it's kind of funny, that first show, because of my old band, Stone Carnival.
God, you're going to have to hold that thought. We're going to have to go for a commercial break right now because I want to hear the rest of this story.
It's crazy.
All right, you're listening to Sharice Unplugged with Jeremy Buck. We'll be right back after these commercials. Okay, so you see a product you like on your favorite TV show, and you're going to write the number down. But if you're like me, you run around trying to find that pen and piece of paper, which magically disappears every time you need them. Then when you get back to the TV, they're already on to something else. Well, now there's a solution. Scene on TV products have combined all the best TV offers online and in one place. It's one-stop shopping. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on the Scene on TV products. Then, who cares if that pesky pen or paper does a disappearing act?
I've heard of Bose for years, but I thought you had to be some electronic geek to appreciate the superior technology and sound that Bose is famous for. Well, I'm not too proud to admit that I was wrong. I found out that Bose is an advertiser on HealthyLife.net, so I just clicked through to check it out, and now I'm proud to say that my home is equipped with superior technology and amazing sharp and bold sound through my solid and compact Bose Wave radio and CD player. Thanks to HealthyLife.net and Bose, what a difference a click made.
Stuff, stuff, stuff. Where can I contain all of my stuff? How about this? The Container Store, the original storage and organization store. And I found their link on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. They have containers for everything, including the kitchen, the bathroom, trash and recycling, traveling, spring cleaning, and dorm rooms. Just about everything you can think of to contain your stuff. The Container Store, right on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. I love food, and I love to eat. The cooking and cleaning part, not so much. Then I found a link to the chef's catalog on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page, and I was happy to find all sorts of amazing recipes and tips on cooking, in addition to great chef-quality kitchen equipment and savings as well. Now I look forward to my time in the kitchen thanks to chef's catalog on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
Keyboard Cat, Hamilton the Pug, and Toast Meets World. These are some of the Internet's most beloved pets. And they all have one thing in common. Their stories started in a shelter. Start your story. Adopt a dog or cat today. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Training that pet to play the keyboard, that's optional. Start a story. Adopt a shelter or rescue pet today. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Hi, everybody. We're back. You're listening to Cherise Unplugged, and we're listening to Jeremy Buck. And he was just telling me a great story. We have to hear this story, Jeremy.
Okay.
Your nickname.
Sorry, I've been bouncing around all over the place, jumping errors, but we got to back it up. So this kind of coincides with my first show I played in California, which is in 2003. But when I was in the band called Stone Carnival, my first band that I was in, we were just like all best friends, and so we had this really strong clique, like a band of brothers, and we gave each other a nickname, so we all had this nickname, and then we nicknamed every one of our fans. Everybody came to the show with just crazy, wild nicknames. So my nickname was Carlito Warrior, and people used it nonstop. Like, most people didn't even know my real name. They just knew me as Carlito or Carlito Warrior just Warrior. And it was great. I wore it well. And then when I moved to California,
Carlito Warrior.
My music, you know, kind of pseudonym was Carlito Warrior. That's what I assumed I would do and be. And so my first show at Susie's, January 19, 2003, I was Carlito Warrior. So I performed as Carlito Warrior.
Tripping me out. I love it,
yeah,
though.
And I created this character. So I wore a wig, and I spoke with a British accent. And I sang, and here's people that I knew I worked with that came to my show and watched me. They know I'm Jeremy, you know, because I was Jeremy at work, but now they're coming to see Carlito Warrior. Here I am. This is before Lady Gaga. I mean, this is like,
Let's hear it.
I'd like to thank you all for coming to the show tonight. It's going to be a really great show. My name's Carlito Warrior. It's a new tune for you. And then something like that. And I had this British accent. People were like entertaining. And I played like five songs. And then, but I got introduced to Joel Geist that came from Vegas. And because of Darren, the next day we went and had breakfast at Good Stuff right there in Hermosa. Mm. And Joel was like, man, I think he goes, here's the deal. I think you're very talented. You got great songs. But he's like, what's that? Oh, it's a trash truck. Sorry.
It's
like, we haven't heard it. This is crazy.
I totally don't know what it is.
Pick up everything. I like, so he was like, yeah, I'd like to work with you, but A, you got to lose the wig. B, you got to lose the accent. And C, you got to lose the name Carlito Warrior. You got to be Jeremy Buck. That's a good enough name. And I was like,
this is from Joel.
This is from Joel, the second day I met him. And I was like, gulp.
Wow.
I was like, wow.
Go, Joel.
I was like, ouch. I was like, well, I didn't really have a choice because I didn't have any money to record myself. I was like, okay, all right, I'll do it. And so he came on board, and then we started recording Secret Made of Dreams, that album. And that's when I nicknamed it the Chateau Moto because we spent all the time in my studio and our studio in the garage. We converted our garage into a recording studio. And then we met a guy named Chris Hanna. We were looking for a guitar player. And then Chris Hanna from Manhattan Beach. We even made one of those little pull tabs like you find at the grocery store for babysitters or dog sitters.
Yeah. You used it for guitar.
We had a pull tab looking for a guitar player, yeah.
Is that how you found Chris?
Yeah. No. Oh. But we did mix him up. We found Chris. We had a demo out, like five songs to kind of a promo demo just to kind of give out to people. And there was a girl named Michelle Porter who was playing in a band, and she invited us to play her birthday party at Hennessy's in Hermosa Beach. So mm-hmm. we went there, and Chris Hanna had a band called Southside Hero. So we met for the first time that night, mm-hmm. and I gave him my little demo, and then I said, I'm looking for a guitar player who can sing, like 2 weeks later, he reaches out to me and said, man, I can't stop listening to this stuff. This is really great. Like, wow. I'm very interested. But he was the lead singer of his own band.
Wow.
I was like, okay. So then I watched them play, and then we were working it out. He's like, I want to jump on board. So he jumped on board, and then we were going strong. That was like in middle of 2004, and then we released our first album, Secret Made Dreams, 2005. And then we got in a van and traveled everywhere. We played as many shows as we possibly could.
Where'd
play.
Where'd you go?
Went to the Midwest many, many times.
Hometown
all hometown, yeah. Bedford, LaPorte, Indiana, Indianapolis.
And the band was called?
Jeremy Buck and the Bang. Originally, it was Jeremy Buck, and then after a while, I was playing with the same guys, and they didn't know. We were in an elevator, and someone would ask, like, what band are you guys in? And then, you know, Chris would be like, Jeremy Buck. But, like, it didn't feel like a band, but we were kind of operating like a band,
yeah.
But it was kind of my name, so we added, took us forever, man. We spent months of, like, Jeremy Buck and the, you know, and the spare change, you know, you know. And then one day, because I played drums and sing live, we were just a trio, I just realized that we had a song called Bang Bang, and I was like, man, you know, I really banged the heck out of the drums, and Jeremy Buck and the Bang is kind of explosive. It bounces. And
yeah.
We were outside the lighthouse, and Jeremy Buck and the Bang, they're like, that's it. So we found
get
it.
Get more bang for your buck.
More bang for your buck. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's where Jeremy Buck and the Bang came from. And yeah, we just did it for.
So that's how you get started.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, from there we started in the lighthouse. We got a residency at the lighthouse every Friday, 4 to 8 p.m., the famous lighthouse down there. It's in La La Land and stuff. And we started there and, you know, in front of, like, nobody, and we went all the way to 2009. So we had
four years
in a really, that's where we got our chops, you know, because we played every Friday. Plus, we were playing, you know, two or three times a week somewhere else, but that was the lock-in date. And when you got to cover 4 hours.
All originals?
No, we played some covers there because we had 4 hours to cover, but I would say a good majority of originals. So that's one thing I've always held close to my heart. Like, if I was going to do this, I really wanted to. I wanted to share what I had to say,
yeah.
And you know, there's other bands out there that, you know, are way better singers, and they sing the covers so well. I was never interested in that. That's not why I got into it. I really like to create and make my own music, and so that's why I'm like, gosh, you know, comes some of these open jams we have. Like, what covers, you know? I was like, I don't really do covers. I don't know. You know, so I got a couple staples, you know, some Stones here and there, but most of the time I'm doing my original things, and I've been very fortunate that the community has embraced that for me.
Your songs are great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
They're sweet, and they're real, and they're tender, and they're fun. They're super genuine songs.
Thank you so much.
Really. It's just, it matches you.
Thank you.
Because that's like who you are, and you feel it. You perform as a really genuine human person, and you're so relatable. It's like you make everybody feel so comfortable.
No, thank you.
It's really cool.
That means so much. Yeah,
you wrote a song for somebody very special.
Well, I've written many songs for
this. Is true. Let me narrow that down.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote a song for my daughter called Someplace Somewhere, and that was the only song I've ever cried writing.
Wow.
So, she was two, and I was putting her in the car seat because I had to work and she had to go, and she was going to the park or something. She's like, Daddy, I just want to go with you. I was like, I can't. And I remember just feeling crushed that, like, I couldn't be with her. And so that kind of spawned this thing, I just want to be with you. So I wrote that. It's a tearjerker song.
Oh.
That's a special one.
Have to hear that on Spotify. Is that your second album?
No, that's, I don't even, that's a single that I released in 2020, I think. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to hear a little bit more about some of the songs you wrote, and I have a couple of other personal questions, too, after we get back from these commercial breaks. You'll hear Sharice Unplugged and Jerry Buck as our special guest. We'll be right back.
Over here. Here's a secret for a virus-free computer. ESET. They've been a pioneer in the antivirus industry for over 25 years. 25 years of innovative, top-rated antivirus protection. ESET's award-winning security solutions provide a safe online experience for over 100 million home and business computer owners. They are so affordable, fast, and simple to use. So be gone, you blue screen of death. ESET's on my computer. If it's not on yours, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ESET now.
With so many wonderful authors appearing as guests on HealthyLife.net, you can easily support their work by browsing the Barnes & Noble link on our advertiser page. Browse for books, or even an e-book, DVDs, movies, music, games, gift cards, and more. Find the Barnes & Noble link on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
A cut above the rest, that's what your hair and experience will be at Kasai Hair in Manhattan Beach. Imagine your haircut in a longer lasting, movie star style, at a lower price than high-end salons. Healthy, beautiful hair, free from scalp problems, hair loss, or damage. You won't find a better cut or experience than at Kasai Hair. So visit KasaiHair.com, or better yet, call for your appointment at 310-546-0023. 310-546-0023. Kasai Hair, 310-546-0023.
To get your message out, social media is great, but if you want to be picked up by major media outlets, let's face it, just using social media makes your chances, well, slim to none. If you want to improve your chances, put your message in the right place. A press release on PR Web. Affordable, easy to use, and with great customer service, there's no reason not to use PR Web. Visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on PR Web now and get started.
Whoa.
The moment my son saw a redwood tree.
It's huge!
Is the moment I knew that for him.
You can't even see the top of that thing.
Even the sky has no limit.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go. Your moment is out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to Cherie's Unplugged with Jeremy Buck. Jeremy Buck and the Bang.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy, I have some questions for you. First of all, you have written a lot of great songs. We were just talking about how I think you were such a beautiful writer.
Thank you.
So genuine, so fun, so just I love your songs. You wrote a wedding song.
I did.
And can you tell me about that?
Yeah. I guess you could say I co-wrote a wedding song.
Okay.
So, a friend of mine who's actually a dentist, his name's Renee, and he lives in Bakersfield. Very cool guy. He's been friend for a long time. He had a stroke and was in the hospital, and while he was in the hospital, he was luckily he's recovered, but during that time he wasn't sure, and he got inspired and started writing down some lyrics for a song. And then after he got out of the hospital, he approached me kind of secretively and said, "Hey man, I got these lyrics. Is there any way you would help me turn this into a song?" Because he was actually engaged to be married. And he goes, "I would love for you to make this a song, and I would love to have it played at our wedding as a surprise to my fiance and or bride-to-be." And I was like, "Wow, that's awesome." And I'd started doing this kind of show called Song Bake that I created a few years ago. And the idea was to kind of take people on a journey of my songwriting process.
And Songbake, it's on YouTube.
Songbake is on YouTube,
so we can
yeah.
follow you on YouTube.
Yeah, you can go to Jeremy Buck Music, or excuse me, Jeremy Buck Video on YouTube, or you can go to jeremybuck.com and get my YouTube links, and you'll see Songbake is a part of a series there. And the idea is, different ingredients, putting into a song, kind of like a baker does, make something. You had a little flour out of this. So the first one I did, I haven't actually released it yet, but it had Steve Ferroni, a drummer for Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and Rhonda Smith, bass player for Prince and Jeff Beck, and Toshi Inagi, guitar player for Jimmy Kimmel, and Matt Rohde from American Idol and The Voice. He's the musical director. So we all got together and wrote a song from scratch and then recorded it. So I've got that all documented, and we were going to pitch it to a network for a show, and COVID hit, and then so I started kind of doing it on my own. So I've got all that footage. I'm going to release that'll be my third episode coming out here in January.
So sound bake.
Song bake.
Song bake.
Yeah, like baking a song.
Of course, yeah.
So I thought this would be an opportunity to film this and make that an episode. So I took his lyrics, and then I put the cameras up in the studio and went through and tried to make the best song I could with what he gave me. And, you know, I added a lot, you know, more to it because the song became bigger to me than what that was. It was a great inspiration. And I thought, man, what are we talking about? And he was talking about the words I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that is what a commitment is all about. When you say the words I do and you get married, I mean, it's through thick and, you know, thickness and, you know, sickness and health and,
right,
and through thick and thin, whatever it is, like you don't break that commitment of I do. And so that's what I found inspiring really about that message. And halfway through writing it, I realized it needed to be a duet. So I asked Lindsay Harper to come sing it, and I'm super proud of how that song came out. And I'm hoping that is like the wedding anthem, you know, for people. And
it's a beautiful
thank you
song.
Thank you.
And you, Lindsay, sound great.
Oh, thank you so much. She's fantastic. Super, yeah. Super pro.
She's amazing.
Yeah, it was great. And we got a video for it out and everything. And so the episode, you can watch episode 2. And
so we're going to look for it on YouTube.
Check it out on YouTube.
Jeremy,
yeah.
On YouTube, and the show is Sound Baked.
Song Baked.
So why do I keep saying sound?
I don't know.
Song Baked.
Song Baked,
it makes
yeah.
so much sense.
Yeah, Song Baked.
And you have episodes on it. I'd love to hear that. I'm going to watch that now.
Check it out. Yes, it's interesting. You know, just take you on the journey.
I want to know a little bit about your dear friend, Kevin. You and Kevin.
Kevin Souza, yes.
Did you guys start Toys for Tots?
So I started it in 2005. That was my first one. Okay. And it was actually called a Christmas Carnival Concert. And it's kind of ironic because I went and rented some carnival games and stuff, like a putt-putt game and stuff like that, to have at the lighthouse when we started there. But there were so many people uh-huh. there that nobody played the games. It was like a waste of money.
Uh-huh.
And it turns out, you know, this year we had a Ferris wheel and all the games, like it's like all kind of came to fruition. You know, it's, I would have loved to have a Ferris wheel in the first one. So it was cool. So Kevin joined, I believe, in 2014.
Mm.
And I decided to do, we had moved out to the Hermosa Beach Pier. We took it out from the lighthouse and brought it to the pier as part of the holiday tree lighting. And I wanted to bring in an all-star band, a whole bunch of the best musicians in the South Bay to come together.
Mm.
And we had to do like holiday songs the first set and then kind of like epic covers after that.
Right.
And Kevin wanted to be a part of it. And then I said, I would love to have him be a part of it. And then he stepped up and then he was like, I'll co-host this with you. And I kind of needed somebody, you know, cause I was kind of mm-hmm. doing it all and he took so much off my plate. And, and then we just really just, I mean, we knew each other and were very, you know, we were friends before that, but that sort of sealed the deal for us. We became very good friends and mm-hmm. we had this, crusade together, you know, a good cause, and he just brought so much to the table.
So, what Rock for Tots is?
So, Rock for Tots is, we just finished our 19th year, and thank you so much for singing. You're amazing, by the way. And we're going to have the videos up, too, on my YouTube channel very soon.
That was an honor.
We had a live stream, but we took it down because I'm re-editing everything and remixing everything, so it's better quality. It'll, you know, stand the test of time. But
honestly, it was a dream come true for me.
It was cool. Well, you sounded amazing. Thank you for singing with me, too. It was awesome. It was so cool.
I'm a lucky one.
Sounds so good. Thank you. So Rock for Tots is something, it's basically, I wanted to bring the music community together and the, you know, musicians and for a good cause. So what we do is we put on a charity concert every year, and we just finished our 19th one. Next year is going to be 20, so that's going to be a big one.
It's going to be big.
It's going to be big. We're going to go all out for that one. We go all out every year, but
mm-hmm.
We bring as many musicians as we can together, local musicians, to come together and put on a concert. It usually lasts, you know, 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And we collect toys, and we do raffles, and so we sell raffle tickets. We sell T-shirts that I make every year, so I do a custom T-shirt every year that we sell. And I made some ornaments, and then people can just donate. You can donate online, too. The website is www.rock4tots, T-O-T-S, so rock4tots.net. And so we raise money that way, and then so we support two incredible charities, the Beach City Toy Drive. They're local. They've been around for 32 years. So they collect the toys. They do a wrapping party. I'm not sure what date that is, but they do it in December, and the community comes together, and we wrap all the toys because they, when they take the toys, they want to, you know, separate them from age and everything. And so, and then they distribute them to probably, there's probably 9 different places. They, you know, send them to children's hospitals and to a bunch of children who are in need and probably not going to get anything or mm-hmm. at all for this holiday.
And I'll tell you, those things matter. I was in a home for kids, and I remember
really?
Christmas time.
like we would get toys. There'd be trucks that came and dropped off toys for us, and it was magic.
Oh, wow, you know, that is amazing.
So it matters.
It makes a difference just to put a little hope in there, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's what that's kind of where that came from. Like, I can't stand the fact that people, I was so blessed I had, you know, amazing Christmases and holidays at home, and I just thought, man, if someone doesn't have that, that's awful. So everybody's jumped on board with that, which is so cool.
Was that your brainchild?
It did. And, you know, one day, you know, there used to be Toys for Tots, the Marine Corps Toys for Tots back in Indiana. I remember that. And I you know, contributed to that. And when I got out to California, we were playing the Lighthouse. Like, how do we make a difference? How do we bring people together? We've been playing. How do we bring people together? So, So we decided to book as many of our friends' bands together to come together, and it was just such an awesome time, energy, so it was great.
Come forward. If you ever need any help, let me know.
I will. Thank you.
Tell everybody where to find you.
You can find me online. You can go to my Spotify, Jeremy Buck. I have all my music on there, or, you know, app, wherever you want to stream, I'm there. The best place maybe is my website, jeremybuck.com. That has all the links to all my socials, so you can follow me on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and just try to keep you entertained, keep you in the loop.
You guys have to listen to his music. It's beautiful. He's a beautiful person, and we are so grateful to have you in this world, Jeremy. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. That went fast. Wow.
It does. I know, right? Well, listen,
thank you so much for having
plugs.
Me. Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It was awesome.
Thank you so much for being here, Jeremy. Seriously. Awesome. All right, everybody, you have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening to Charisse Unplugged. You take care, and I'll see you on the next episode.
Awesome.